This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
What are the most memorable travel adventures? Those where we open our eyes and our minds to new experiences. It's all to see here in Azerbaijan. New flavours, a new appreciation of ancient history, of natural beauty and of rich contrasts. This is a world of culture, cuisine, wellness and adventure, all yours for the taking. Thought you knew Azerbaijan? Take another look. To plan your Azerbaijan adventure, visit azerbaijan.travel.
I'm Sumi Somaskander from the Global Story podcast, where we're looking at Ukraine's surprise attack on Russian territory. Thousands of Russian residents have been forced to flee their homes as Ukrainian forces edge closer and closer into Russia. Could this bold gamble shift the dynamics of this war, or could it backfire? The Global Story podcast brings you unique perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is
The Stephen Nolan Show!
Hello everyone, so lots of students getting their results today, and all of that joy, and all of that disappointment. But if you get to the grey hair stage, you kind of know, which they don't know, that there are so many different pathways at life that it's not necessarily a life-defining time. So we'll talk to students on the programme today. We're also talking about the maze again and what story could be told at that site, the museum's body, in early talks about what could or couldn't be told about our history at that site. The Education Minister, Paul Given, saying the DUP will not tolerate it becoming a shrine to terrorists and all that goes with that type of discussion. So that's what's on the Nolan Show.
The Stephen Nolan Show!
Good morning, everyone. Welcome along to the Nolan Show. So this is when we all feel old, isn't it? When we're talking about results day today for the students, and we're all thinking back if we can remember as to how we were feeling when we got our results. And the bottom line is this, and we all know this for those of us that have the experience, in other words, the age, we all know that if you get good results, cracking, and we all know that if you don't, you can still pave your way through life, you can still decide and fight for what you want to do. That's the bottom line, right? Principal Mr. McLaughlin at Banbridge Academy is opening the doors for his students this morning. Good morning to you, Mr. McLaughlin.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So is this an exciting day? Is this a day when nerves are throughout that building of your school or what?
It's a day of congratulations to the students, to their parents and my colleagues after obviously the pandemic and the years that were particularly challenging in their educational journey to achieve their excellent results and move on to the next stage of their lives. But as you said in your opening comments, for many they've done incredibly well, and for some it may not be the results that they had hoped to attain. But there are many different routes and many different opportunities. And my advice this morning would be to say well done and congratulations on your results and look forward to the next stage of your journey. And there are plenty of opportunities available.
For people who get really good results, should they still contemplate? Because I've been, you know, should they still contemplate not going to university? Because if they've got really good results, then they've got the ability to achieve. So should they maybe think to themselves, all right, I've got an A in this and an A in that. I'm going to go straight into the workplace and I'm going to excel.
So For some students, going to the workplace, particularly higher level apprenticeships, is the route that they choose to go to. A lot of the major employers in Northern Ireland and indeed further afield are now offering higher level apprenticeships, which are an excellent route into employment and continuing into getting further qualifications. And for others, going to university is the route. I would honestly say it is entirely up to the individual student. Dara said, for those that are our age, will remember maybe a restricted choice. There are so many choices in today's modern world, which is great. The regional colleges, apprenticeships, employment, universities across these islands. There are many different opportunities for students. So I always encourage students to look at the range of opportunities that are available and ensure that they have choices, because that flexibility gives them the freedom to progress their careers in a chosen manner.
And how do you care about a kid that hasn't got what they expected to get?
So there are a number of things that we need to do today. The first is be open, and that's why we are open, and ensure that we have our career staff here, we have our heads of department, and we have our senior team. So we are here to help those students, and indeed their parents, at a time when it's difficult for them to make life choices. And as we know with age, they're not lifelong choices. Their choice is now that sets a direction of travel to a particular career. So the first is be available to help those students. The second is what I've already said. Don't panic. There are opportunities. It may not be the first choice, but there is a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth option for you to consider. And what we have found in the past, things always work out.
Mr. McLaughlin,
if they take the time.
I know you're going to bring us some students to talk to later on, so I'll let you get back to them and hopefully we'll hear from them later on. Thanks very much, sir. Thank you. It's Mr. McLaughlin from Banbridge Academy. We're talking about age and experience. Saoirse Eastwood's got all of that. Good morning, Saoirse.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thank you. So did you go to uni?
Right. So I went through the whole system of go to high school, do your A-levels, always wanted to do law. And the reason I wanted to do law was because I thought I was going to be able to change the world. And I immediately started law school last September and just hated it straight away. So I dropped out and it was the best thing I ever did. I was absolutely scared as hell at the time. I felt like a complete and utter failure.
You dropped out of university?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just felt that it wasn't right for me. It wasn't what I wanted to do. And I felt very scared and alone. And I felt that everything the system had told me had basically said, you've failed. And I was lucky that I was working part-time at the time in Tesco. And that was a real lifeline for me. And basically, long story short, I then was offered to do a pilot scheme of what is now called a higher level apprenticeship. And I was very lucky in that they recognised something in me and they encouraged me to apply for it because you needed A levels to do it, which is now like the higher level apprenticeships that we have today. And I went for it basically, and it really brought me out of my shell. I'm very bad at math, so it really taught me a lot about myself. And I think at that stage in my life, the place I needed to be was in the workplace, and it was hands-on. It was taking deliveries off the baccalaureates. It was operating the pallet truck. It was all those things that I never thought I would have been able to do, and that's exactly what I needed. So I spent a lot of time there on their in-house management training program, and that really gave me confidence, as I say, around numbers, around numeracy, and just developing life skills, which I think has been the most important thing.
Because, what people will be talking about today is congratulations to parents and the kids who've achieved and all that goes with it. Actually, parents can also be a problem in these situations if they don't. Sometimes some parents want to relive their student days through their children, and they put this pressure on, go to this university or make sure you go to university, for example. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily the right route. It might be, it might not be. So parents have got a lot of responsibility this morning to be sending the right message to their young people.
They do, yeah. And I mean, I think probably in a way having the conversation this morning is important and worthwhile, but it's a conversation that we need to have societally in terms of our policy makers, our decision makers, and say, look, there's no point having the conversations now. It needs to start much earlier. And that's why I have been campaigning for a number of years now on careers advice. I think that really needs to start much earlier than what it does. Some schools are excellent at it. You had Mr. McLaughlin on there from Banbridge Academy, great school. They really care about their kids, and they are really brilliant, as many other schools are, about offering real life work experience. And I think what's happening now is that a lot of parents are kind of realising, actually, you know, my young person could still go on and get a third level qualification through a higher level apprenticeship or through an apprenticeship at 16, starting on the tools or in the office or whatever it is, and taking their time about it. And frankly, you know, I'll be honest, not coming out of it in a situation with debt or having to worry about student housing, all those sorts of things. So for me, people are now starting to become a bit more savvy on it. For others, that straight leaving school, going to uni, that'll still be their thing. That's what they want to do. That'll work for them. But it doesn't mean that it's any better than anyone else's route. And it doesn't mean that you get a lot of people coming out the other side with their degree and they expect to walk into a job, and they don't. And, you know, that's another conversation that we need to have with our young people, to say, look, just because you have a degree doesn't mean you will get a job. It doesn't mean you will get a job in your field, your line of what your degree was in or whatever. And that's okay. And that's okay. And take the opportunities that come in front of you and get as much experience and opportunity as you can from everything, because ultimately it'll get you where you want to go.
The other big decision, And I remember this at the time. For me, I decided to stay in Northern Ireland. Lots of my friends in school, I just wasn't ready to leave, to be honest. I just wasn't mature enough. I wasn't confident enough. But the big decision that these people, 18-year-olds, will be deciding here is, do they get out of Northern Ireland? Do they go and do they get that experience outside of here? Sometimes some people think that is a life-defining experience, seeing opportunities from out here and from outside of here, and parents will be pushing them to get out of here and meet new people in a different environment. And actually, on the contrary, there's something nice about being at home. There's something nice about Northern Ireland. So that's a big decision as well, Saoirse. Do you stay or do you go?
You're asking the wrong person, because I'm a total home bird as well. I've been on a plane more times in the last few months than I've ever been in my life. So, you know, I'm kind of the wrong person to be asking. But, you know, what I can say is that it's important that our young people will take all the opportunities and get the opportunities that everybody else has, and travel, and, you know, whether it's moving away or whether it's travelling, whatever it may be, is a really big key part of that, because we are a very small place in the massive world that we live in. And I think it's important for those young people just to visit other places, to see how things are done. Obviously, there's been a conversation in the last number of years about the brain drain, where people talk about lots of young people from here going, whether it's across the water, whether it's, you know, further afield. I think one thing that really has come through in my sort of experience, and just being on the economy committee before I left the assembly, was we don't actually have a lot of young people who are able to go down south, where a lot of them would want to. So you're still getting experience of moving away from home, but you're maybe 2-3 hours away in the car or whatever it may be. And I think we need to be a lot smarter and a lot more agile in terms of how we operate that interface between UCAS and CAO in the south, and enable that to be opened up in the same way that it is for young people going to Scotland, Wales or GB.
I'll tell you, for those people contemplating going down south for their education, it's cheaper. It's around €3,000. What's that? About €2,500. Here it's nearly €5,000. In England, it's Wales and Scotland, it's around, it can go up to €9,000. So look at the difference in those fees.
Well, exactly, and you're still getting the same experience of moving away, but yet, you know, you don't have to hop on a plane. You can take the car, you can do whatever. And ultimately, that means that from a selfish perspective, we're hopefully retaining those young people on the island of Ireland rather than losing them to, you know, further afield, continental Europe or the US. There was a really interesting piece on Good Morning Ulster this morning about young guys getting scholarships through football, and they were just leaving here and going straight to the US. They weren't even stopping. So, you know, we don't want to lose all our talent. And if you speak to most young parents now, they're worried about losing their kids, you know, to going away, to leaving this place. I want us to have a better future here for all of our young people. I want every single young person to feel valued and loved and cherished and respected. And unfortunately, the reality is that a lot of them don't feel that at the minute, and it's our job to make sure that they do.
So, I know you've got to go in just a couple of minutes, Saoirse. So I want to ask you about the Mays site as well. Before you do go, if you're calling us about the student results today, 0330 80 55 55. But before you do go, Saoirse, this new museum that could be at the Mays prison site, this was talked about and talked about and talked about. There was political impasse. So now the body in charge of Northern Ireland's museums has been in talks about the future, and they think that they might have some ideas as to how to bring it forward. How do you tell the story, for example, of Bobby Sands and get political agreement around that? How do you do that?
Well, look, I mean, I think for me,
who died at that site?
I think for me, the Mays Longfesh site is something that's very personal and important to me as the MP for Lygon Valley, but it's important to many people right across Northern Ireland. And for us, what we've seen is 12 years of political failure where we haven't been able to get that site across the line. I actually did an adjournment debate in the Assembly a few months ago before I left. And I'll be honest with you, there was good political consensus about the need to take action now and the need that actually we won't agree on everything. But we can't let that be a stumbling block anymore. We're talking about young people moving away. I don't want to turn this into, you know, the traditional row that we've had for decades.
But it's exactly. Are you being naive? I've heard this morning.
No, not at all.
Well, so you can't agree a programme for government. How are you going to agree the story of the past? How?
Let me tell you why. This place is changing. And, you know, that came up, the issue of the Mays Longfesh being utilised during the recent election campaign there. And you know what? You would be surprised at the number of people with their worldview and their political views that were like, look, we need to move on now.
Hold on a minute.
We need to see this develop.
But Saoirse, I am not asking a question around whether there are many people in the community who are changing. And I'm talking about the politicians, the political parties. You can't agree with each other about a programme for government. How are you going to agree with each other? How is Gavin Robinson going to agree with Michelle O'Neill, for example, or Naomi Long, your leader, as to how to tell the story of the H Block?
And sure, Stephen, isn't that the challenge of leadership? You know, that's the challenge of leadership. And we have a very clear choice here. Either we leave that site derelict, which, as I'm sure we'll probably talk about in the months ahead about the pressures in public finances, or we take bold, courageous political leadership and we say, look, that could provide 14,000 jobs for young people that we've just spoke about moving away. No one's going to ever agree on anything, but I think what we probably can and should, and in lots of ways through community leadership and grassroots, respect each other. And as others have said, organisations like National Museums have a really good, strong track record in terms of curating displays, whatever it may be, telling stories. But it's also important to note that site in itself is historic. Okay. And our past didn't just start 50 or 60 years ago. We have a much broader and much bigger story to tell. And actually, just one last point, in terms of stuff that's gone on in the last few weeks and months, we have a new story to tell as well of people who have come to Northern Ireland and made this place their home. And they also have a say, and they also have as much right and as much import in our story and that coloured fabric
so
that we're weaving together.
Here's one last question around this. So let's link the two together. We're talking about a new generation getting the results today. So, and we're talking about
whether there could be agreement in this country about how you tell the story of the past at the Mays. So there is an 18-year-old the new generation, and they go up to this museum, Saoirse. What story would you support about, for example, Bobby Sands? Is the story that he was a hero, or was he a terrorist? What story would Alliance Party support him telling, the museum telling? Hero or terrorist?
And these are the sort of discussions that people want to get into. I would imagine that 18-year-olds would probably be more interested in the prospect of a job, Stephen. Our history, our past is littered with stories that people will be...
But this museum's going to be telling a story. So how do you get an agreement around the narrative of the story, or do you allow two stories to be told? One, for example, that those hunger strikers were heroes, and another, that they were terrorists. Is that what you would support, that you tell both stories?
I think there's more than two stories. There's multiple stories.
Would you support those two stories being told among, no matter how many stories there are, at that museum?
I think there's multiple stories, and it's more than two. But the most important story that needs to be told is that we have a choice to take a step forward and to say, way, way, way before you even get into what you're talking about, do we actually take action today?
Do both stories have to be... Saoirse, I know you need to go, so I need to let you go. But do both stories need to be told for that Mays site to work?
Stephen, this is a place that we all have to share together.
No,
I am answering you. This is a place we have to share together. For some people, that will be really difficult and really hurtful, and nobody for a second is minimising that. For others, they will feel that they want to tell their story. There's much more than two stories, much more.
Okay.
But you know, the bigger one that needs to come out of today is that we commit to work together for everybody. We can't let our past hold us back anymore whenever it comes to decisions like this.
Okay. Saoirse, thank you very much indeed. We'll speak to the guy who got the story, the man who had the story, Brendan Hughes, from BBC News in just a moment or two. David in Hillsborough, back to the results today. Morning, David.
Morning, Stephen. I'd just like to say, you've done very well in life.
Have I?
I think so. Well, as regards, like, there's nobody else in your pay, hardly in the whole country. But anyway, we'll move on from that.
Well, it was my dream to work at the BBC. My absolute ambition to work at the BBC. And I can tell you now, my degree in... I can't remember what it was in. Business and French. I think it was in that.
Brilliant.
Diddly squat to do with me getting in here. Absolutely nothing. But what I did when I was at university, I was at Queen's, what I did was every single night I was sitting in a local radio station, BCR it was at the time, and I was answering the phones, and I was watching the other journalists, and I was getting the air miles of doing all that you need to do.
Somebody says if you do a job you love, you've never worked a day in your life. You love doing that.
Yeah, but the decision that I made at 18, 19 years of age, I missed some lectures in order to go volunteer in that local radio station answering phones. All I was doing there was getting to know people. I was trying to build up contacts.
And it has worked out really well for you. But sometimes, just a couple of points here, sometimes careers advisors in school, I know certainly many years ago when I was there, they would never have suggested trades hardly. It was all education.
Yeah.
And you know, and I know now, if you go to get a plumber, an electrician is £200 a day or whatever.
Don't start me about a plumber.
Listen, I have a good plumber. Don't worry about that. I just want to say, our two girls have done well in education with going to university, Queen's and whatever, and the younger one's now working in London. But the thing about it is, in Scotland, a Scottish student gets for free into university. That's one point. Now, if any of our children go over to England or Scotland, it's £9,000 fees per year.
That's now, right. It's up to five here. Thing, I didn't know it was so much cheaper in the South.
Yes, but then you have to remember the cost of living down there too. Although the cost of rent in Belfast has gone up 25% since last year to almost £400 per room per student.
Were you one of these pushy parents that kind of
No, I was not a preachy parent. One of my girls wanted to go to England. I went over with her to the university. One of them wanted to go to Scotland, and I went with her and encouraged her to go if she wanted. They both ended up here at university. But the other thing is that if you go to either of those places, you end up with at least 20,000 or more extra costs for the same degree. And people, I think, don't always think, listen, it's lovely to go to Scotland to go to university. Lovely to go anywhere in the world. But you have to realise the extra costs.
It might be. And look, there are lots. There's so many people, David, that I think travel is so important at that age, right?
Yes, yes.
And I used to go to America for 2 or 3 months at that age in the summer. Camp America, or whatever it was called, Buna Camp.
Yes.
But there's also something when you get the years of experience, David, in other words, you get old. There is also something about being with mum and dad, being with your family for as long as you can.
You quite often find that people do come home maybe when they marry and have a couple of kids because, you know, they want to be near granny and grand or whatever.
But isn't that lovely? And you lose some of that if you go away. So if you're that 18-year-old and you're not getting your washing done by mum or dad.
Oh, no, but does you no harm?
But it also does no harm to be able to call up to mum and dad, granny and granddad, when you're 18, 19 or 20, and there they are. So this is the dilemma
One other wee thing was whenever our girls both left A-levels with good results, they both took a year out and, you know, worked a bit and travelled a bit. One went to Asia for 4 months and travelled over there. The other one travelled a bit in Europe and stuff.
Yes.
So I would say the year out after they finish school is, one young lad said to me one day, he says, I've done 14 years of school and I'm looking a break before I go to uni. He was working in Sainsbury's and bless him for doing it.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of complexities here. And I think you don't want to push education too much because there are trades out there. And as you said, sometimes going straight into a business can also achieve great things for young people.
Plumber, joiner.
Yep.
All that comes with it. Look, it's for another day. How much are plumbers making these days?
Well, listen, they're not making as much as you, Stephen. And they do have to get their hands dirty. Thanks, big lad.
Thanks a lot. Morning.
All of it.
Morning to you. 03030 80 55 55. Right, we'll bounce between the two stories this morning. The results for the students, this political story about the maze and whether agreement can ever be found in this country as to what should happen at that site. Brendan Hughes from BBC News NI with us this morning. Brendan, good morning.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. I'm just thinking I'm getting into the newsroom soon, of course. Do I have to wear shoes when I go in? I don't wear shoes or socks. Do I have to wear shoes when I come into your office?
I think, are you going to be moving over to our office, Stephen, or are you going to be staying where you are?
Now you're going to create a front page headline now. Answer the question. Am I going to have to keep my socks on?
Well, I don't think I'd be allowed to get away with not wearing shoes, so I'm sure that applies to all staff members within the BBC.
Okay.
That would be the case.
What about shorts? Are they acceptable in the BBC newsroom?
Well, maybe we need some sort of uniform attire or something that, you know, we can all abide by, and then we don't have to have these sorts of disputes about these sorts of things, perhaps.
And tell me this, did you go to university or what was your journey? Because by the way, and I'm not being a sycophant, you're really, really good at what you do. So what was your journey into journalism?
Well, thanks very much, Stephen. But yes, I did go to university, like I suppose a lot of young people, you know, you're encouraged to go towards university. But like yourself, whenever you were speaking earlier, I don't think it necessarily had like a major role in what I went on to do. I think I was probably at school, like probably quite... I know, a bit of a stew, people would say, in terms of like doing well in exams and things like that. But it's all gone downhill since there, as you can see.
So you did or didn't go to uni?
I did. So yes, I did go to uni. I did a degree in law and accounting. Law and accounting. Ask me anything about either of those now, and I would not be able to tell you a single thing. So that's how much use it was. But while I was at university, I luckily enough got involved in the student newspaper at Queen's called The Gown. So that was sort of my sort of start into journalism. Whenever you sort of get the bug for other things, so I think that's probably part of the big reason why a lot of young people really should go to university, if that's the thing that you want to do, because you obviously get the opportunity to speak to so many different people from different backgrounds that you wouldn't have seen before, and obviously get involved in many different clubs and societies that might pique your interest that maybe nothing to do with the degree that you originally set out on, I suppose.
Now, you, sir, have got a good story today. It's around this museum body, and they can, am I getting this right, they can contribute to ideas around how you tell the story of our past at the Maze. But the question for me is, how can they contribute? What are their ideas? Do we know? Set this out for us.
Well, it is very early days, Stephen, in terms of these discussions. I suppose just to set out a bit of the background of this site. Now, this is one of Northern Ireland's largest development sites in public ownership. It's around 350 acres. So it's a really big site that for the Stormont Executive Office and for the executive as a whole, really there has been some sort of effort to try and redevelop that over the years. But of course, as we know, it has been stuck in this 11-year political stalemate over the proposed plans at the time for a peace centre on the site. We know that the DUP 11 years ago, this week in fact, there was a letter from when the then First Minister, Peter Robinson, who blocked the plans for a peace centre. The letter from Florida, he was on holidays in Florida at the time, and he sent this letter. Basically, he'd been facing pressure from unionist rivals at the time who were concerned that, in their words, that this peace centre could become what they considered a shrine to terrorism because of, I suppose, the Maze sent the former prisons having held former paramilitary prisoners and being the site of the Republican hunger strikes in 1981. So that's a bit of the background of this. But in terms of what we have seen over the past 11 years, there really hasn't been much movement at all as to what is going to happen with that. There has been that continued stalemate between Sinn Féin and the DUP over what to do next. And that's really because in terms of what is decided, that is ultimately the decision of both the First Minister and Deputy First Minister. So if one doesn't agree to something, then nothing happens, really. So what we see now is we've been looking at the minutes of the Maze Long Kesh Development Corporation. That's this public body that was set up back in 2012 to try and come up with plans to regenerate this site, plans that could build a political consensus. And what we see in those minutes is that in recent months they have met with the body which is in charge of museums in Northern Ireland, the National Museums NI body, and they have been discussing what can be done to try and come up with some sort of partnership agreement between the two of them about the former Maze prison site and about potentially accessing those former prison buildings again.
I'm reading a copy on the BBC News website here. National Museums NI, you've written it, said it had discussed what role it could play in the interpretation of and access to the former prison. So what I want to know is, when it's discussed it, what is National Museums NI actually saying in those discussions? What role can it play in the interpretation of the Maze? How do you tell that story?
Well, I think, Stephen, that is the big challenge and the big question. Now, I think from what we have seen, these discussions are at very early stages. The minutes that we have seen of this meeting with the Maze Long Kesh Development Corporation Board talks about forming a draft partnership agreement, that's in development between the two bodies. And the notes also say about access to the prison site, that potentially that could be managed by the Northern Ireland Museums body under agreed criteria. But there's also this note within these minutes that this can only be activated, this partnership agreement, once there has been political buy-in or political agreement on a way forward. So that will continue to be the big sticking point.
And all of those years ago, you had this standoff between Peter Robinson and that letter from America, as you describe it, and Martin McGuinness. So surely the question here is for the likes of Gavin Robinson, the leader of the DUP, and indeed now Michelle O'Neill and Emma Little-Pengelly, Does Gavin Robinson still, does he have a concern that this will be a shrine to terrorists, as his predecessor did? Yes or no? That's one of the questions, isn't it?
I think it will be one of the questions if we manage to get to speak to someone from the DUP today on this. You know, I think that this has long been a point of contention for both the DUP and Sinn Féin over what to do with this. We're not even sure whether the Peace Centre plans will still be on the table at the end of these discussions or this process, because it was a number of years ago that the former chair of the development body, the Maes Long Cash Development Corporation, said that the proposed Peace Centre had been taken off the table by them, and they were going to try and move forward with redeveloping this wider, huge, sprawling site and trying to make use of it and sort of park the Peace Centre element. And of course, as we know, there's a major funding issue for many departments and public services in Northern Ireland, so there's even a question mark as to whether there's any money to do something like this.
And final question. You've said about this body, I can't remember the name of it because you said it more than 3 seconds ago, that's been sitting since, what, 2012?
Yes, the Maes Long Cash Development Corporation, it was established in, I think, September of 2012. It was set up to try and come up with a full-scale regeneration plan for the entire site. Now, some things have happened on the site. We have, of course, the likes of the annual Balmoral Show, which is held on the former site.
Unmissable.
We have also Unmissable, of course, and the Ulster Aviation Society uses the site, and we also have had minor political agreements in the years that have followed, such as the Air Ambulance being allowed to use the site. So that would have required First and Deputy First Minister approval to use that site. But in terms of the wider plan or vision for the regeneration of the site, that still remains an open question.
But that body,
yes, sorry,
are they paid every year? How many members are on that body? That body's from 2012 to redevelop the Maes site. Here we are, 2024. Is that 12 years of taxpayers' money? Is it minimal money? Are they paid a lot? Are they volunteers?
The body is paid, so there would be, you know, I'm just looking online here. It was back in November that there was the announcement of appointments of 6 new board members to the Maes Long Cash Development Corporation, and it does talk about some of the remuneration that they receive for their roles. It says here that the remuneration of the chair is £30,000 per annum, plus reasonable travel and subsistence expenses, and remuneration for members is £6,000 per annum plus reasonable travel and subsistence expenses. £6,000 per annum. So
the chair's, you know, getting £30,000 a year to redevelop the Maes site, and 12 years later, £360,000 of public money later, we're still at the same point, are we not, in terms of what to do with that site?
Well, I suppose it would be for the Maes Long Cash Development Corporation to talk a bit more about what has been done in the intervening period, what efforts they have made. But I suppose when it comes down to it, any proposals or plans that they put on the table can ultimately be vetoed by either the First Minister or Deputy First Minister. And that's why we've seen over the past 10, 11 years that many even proposed visits to the former prison site have not been approved by the Executive Office, because ultimately they have the final say over what happens. So we have heard from the First and Deputy First Minister in recent months. There has been a debate, for instance, that was brought by the Alliance Party MP now, Saoirse Eastwood, about this site, and they have talked with positivity about the huge potential that this site has, but we continue to not see what the actual tangible proposals will be and what they're willing to come to some sort of political agreement on.
Good stuff, Brendan. Thank you very much indeed. That's Brendan Hughes. Gary, good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Go ahead, sir. Thanks for calling.
No, Stephen, I was at, just talking about the whole Maes development. I was at a presentation many years ago as to what the new interpretive centre would be like. And I was lucky enough to be on the last ever tour of the prison. So at that stage, if you got signed off by a nationalist and a unionist MLA, you were able to go as a community group.
Right.
So I went to the last one, walked in. One of the points that took us and pointed out was the wire mesh. Just look at this wire mesh above the H-block. Why is that different looking? Because that's where the NLA cut it out when they came down and shot Billy Wright. You know, they were telling us this. They were showing you the hospital wings. They were showing you, and this is the bed. And somebody goes, is this the bed where Bobby Sands died? And they went, no, it's not. but you will have a lot of people who will come and ask that question and will want to try to get their picture taken with it. Now, the prison site was a fantastic tour when you're going around and you're talking about the whole security aspects. But my issue would be the narrative that's going to be told on a tour. For instance, you look at the Crumlin Road Jail. The Crumlin Road Jail is a massive tourist attraction. I've been there with work. But yet, they never mention the bombing in 1991 and two loyalist prisoners were killed. You know, that whole narrative is wiped out from the Crumlin Road. The Mays site has so much potential, but yet, when you talk about the H blocks and the history there, it's going to have to be very, very delicately covered and managed in a certain way that certain parts are.
Is it achievable anytime soon? Look, it's a great story that Brendan has brought to the media today about these initial discussions going on. I actually think there's a story in where Penn, whatever it is, if six people are getting $6,000 of a salary, plus $30,000 for the chair, that's about 400, that's about $700,000 all in, is it?
There's so much, Stephen. There's so much to be done with that site and the community.
But what can we do beyond the? Do you think there's any chance that there's going to be agreement over that site anytime soon?
I can't see it soon, but I think it has to be done. And somebody's going to have to take the lead. And the community is going to have to be brought in. Both sides of the community are going to have a say in it. But it can't be allowed to become a propaganda piece. That's my whole point. You know, the site itself is amazing. But people seem to forget the Mays isn't just about the prison. There was a massive RAF base there. There's local history. You go across the road to the small housing estate. There's big placards up showing you the history of the site.
Gary, they can't agree a list of priorities in Stormont. This was yesterday's show. They can't put together a programme for government. Do you think they're going to sit down and work out how to tell the story of the Mays?
Maybe the only option is to take it out of their hands and put somebody else in. And maybe this is where this discussion from the National Museums is coming from.
Yeah, but we don't know what their ideas are. We need to know what their ideas are about what story would be told.
Totally agree with you. And I remember back at the time with all the protests, Willie Fraser, all the protests, and some of the stuff they were spouting off about what's going to happen in this prison site was just absolute nonsense.
You see those kids the other day who were singing Ooh Ah Up the Ra as an example, right? So they go up to the Mays. What story are they told about what happened before they were born?
That was my next point.
Those people who are singing the Billy Boy song, mm-hmm. what are their children being told if they go up to the Mays? That's how important this is.
That's the point I was about to make. When you see those young children in Dublin chanting, when you hear about the Fela, when you hear about stuff in football clubs, this is the problem. And a lot of these kids don't know their history.
But it's going to have to be something that's very delicately done. But what version of history are they being taught in a public building in Northern Ireland?
Well, look at the Museum of Botanic. What narrative is taught there about the Troubles? I don't think there's a certain way. So there is ways of managing things. Things can be managed, they can be done. But it has to be done respectfully for both communities.
Should there be, as part of our curriculum, I'm coming away from the Mays here for a second, should there be compulsory modules in our education system so that children hear all the perspectives of how people agree and disagree about what happened in our past? Should it be taught to them? Should the different perspectives be taught to every one of them as they're growing up?
I think you need something. I mean, I done Irish history at school, but I went to a grammar school. A lot of the secondary schools in the Protestant community didn't do Irish history. So there's the difference. A lot of people don't even have history. I have a son who's coming 16, doesn't want to know anything about this, doesn't want to know about the Troubles, doesn't want to know anything. He's not going to be singing Ooh Ah Up the Ra or Ooh Ah Up anybody else because he's too busy playing an Xbox. He's too busy worried about social anxiety because of COVID. There's too many kids now I know in the community sector are worried about suicide, mental health, drugs, that simply don't care about the Troubles.
Okay. Listen, Gary, good call. Thank you, sir. 030 30 80 55 55. As I say this morning, we're bouncing between the two different subjects, the Mays prison site, and could we ever get to a stage where we get agreement about a story being told there and all the students getting their results today? The Education Minister, Paul Given, with us this morning. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, good morning. Did you go to uni?
I did, yeah. University of Ulster, Jordanstown campus. But it was the final year of a degree that I entered because I didn't quite get the results that I wanted whenever I was at this stage.
What did you get?
Well, mine was a GNVQ in business studies. So after I completed my GCSEs, then I stayed on at my school in Lisburn, Laurel Hill Community College. It was a secondary school. And when I completed the GNVQ, I was able to enter into the Lisburn Further and Higher College for 2 years, and I completed an HND, a Higher National Diploma, got the result that I needed, which got me into the final year of a degree at Jordanstown, and then I was able to complete my studies there. So my pathway was not probably as straightforward as some in terms of the results that they're getting today, but I was able to get there in terms of the degree, but and that was important that I had that qualification. But there's a lot more to life as well. And today is a hugely important day, exceptional results. I'm incredibly proud of our young people. But for some, there'll be disappointment and there'll be challenges. And they may end up going down in a different pathway in life. But it's how you can respond to those challenges is what will define you, not necessarily the results that you've received today, albeit we have to acknowledge that for some, there will be disappointment.
And those results that people are getting today, one of the dilemmas that they'll have when they look at the results is, do they stay in Northern Ireland and study? Some people would argue broaden your base experience somewhere else. What do you think?
I think that people will take choices that best suit their circumstances, and there'll be lots of different factors that will come into play. One, the cost of living in terms of if you move away from home, can you afford to do that? The fees that you pay if you were to study in England in comparison to Northern Ireland, but also being able to access the course that you want to access. So there'll be lots of factors which will come into play whenever people take that decision. I want to make sure that in Northern Ireland we get as many people as possible that want to go to university able to go to uni. And for those who do go away, that we can bring them back to Northern Ireland and they can share that learned experience that they've had elsewhere, but be able to contribute to our society and economy by coming back home. And that's where we just need to keep working on making Northern Ireland an attractive place to live and to work.
We were looking at some of the fees associated with studying here, and it's up to $5,000 here compared to around $9,000. Across the water, but it's a lot cheaper in the south, €3,000 in the south.
And if you were to study in Dublin, for example, that may be an option for some. Some of the students I've been speaking to this morning have been down at Belfast High School, and they've had tremendous results in speaking to some of the pupils. And if you want to do medicine, you can do it in Queens, but you can also do it in Trinity in Dublin. But then they'll highlight the cost of living in Dublin is a lot higher than Northern Ireland. So there's different factors that will come into play. We obviously have fees here in Northern Ireland at a reduced rate compared to other parts of the UK like England. I support that, but also that does come with the debate around the number of places then that can be provided in Northern Ireland. And you're always having to weigh those considerations up in terms of
where are we at with number of places
and the fees.
Where are we at with that?
Well, it's Department for Economy, so I'm not across that detail
okay,
in terms of the exact number of university places that we have, but I know it is a debate that that takes place around the number of fees that the fee level that we set, and some universities here would like the cap to be lifted to allow more students to study in Northern Ireland universities. But we also have an issue that I think, and I've raised, which is important, the number of international students that come to Northern Ireland, because universities can charge a lot higher fees for that. And, you know, is that squeezing out people from Northern Ireland being able to access university? And that is a conversation that needs to take place as well for particular types of subjects.
And Paul, before you go this morning, we've also been talking about the Meath prison site. There's now yet again a political discussion. Could we ever reach agreement as to how to tell the story of the Meath? Peter Robinson sent that letter from America saying it could be a shrine to terrorists. Do you have a view as to whether anything has changed in Northern Ireland around that Meath site in terms of telling the story?
Well, there won't be a shrine at the Meath. You know, there isn't a shrine at the Crumlin Road Jail, which is open to the public, and there won't be a shrine at the Meath either. And I come from this, you know, where my father served as a prison officer for 36 years. He worked in the H blocks with provisional IRA prisoners, with loyalist prisoners. He was there during the hunger strike. He was there whenever Bobby Sands died. And so I know personally from my family what is involved whenever you served in the Meath prison, the threat that you were under. You know, our windows were blew out in our house. My dad checked under his car every single journey. So, you know, there never will be a shrine at the Meath because...
But do you think a story can be told?
I think there's
on
a story
both sides
to be told.
At that site?
I think inevitably there's a story to be told. I've told you in 1 minute, briefly, my kind of family history, and I think it's a lost story. The price that was paid by prison officer families, some who lost their lives, many who were injured, huge mental health issues within that community, and they're a forgotten people. And they should never be forgotten for what they served and were able to do. Okay. So, you know, of course, there's a way to manage, you know, our past, but there never will be a shrine at the Meath prison. That's not going to happen.
Paul Given, thank you very much. Let's continue talking about that with Carl White from the SDLP, Alistair Kyle, the TUV councillor. Morning, Carl. Morning, Alistair.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning, good morning. Well, Carl, there you have it. Paul, the DUP saying this morning through Paul Given there will never be a shrine at the Meath, and some people will want the story very much told about the significant heroic figure that they see Bobby Sands and other hunger strikers and other Republicans to have been who spent time at the Meath.
Well, it's good to hear Paul Given use that language because the only person that ever talked about there being any shrine in the Meath Long Cash site was the former DUP leader, Peter Robinson. It was very unhelpful. When Mark Durkin was Deputy First Minister, he worked to secure the transfer of many sites, including Crumlin Road Jail, Meath Long Cash, Liffin Alley, Everington, and successfully did that. And all those other projects are at different stages of progress and development, while the Meath has languished, apart from Balmoral Show, which moved down there expecting to be joined by lots of other organisations, and that never happened. So we can do museums. We can tell stories, Stephen. We live in a society where there is no single narrative of what happened, and I have a view and people have a view, and that's interesting to hear Paul's comments there about his own family's experience.
Alistair,
and that has to be valued.
Alistair, do you agree we can tell both stories, or many stories, at that site?
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
First of all, like, we won't deny that there's potential with a site, particularly due to its size and the proximity to the M1. But there would be a higher potential if the old H blocks were levelled, a new site was left, and it removes the stigma of the buildings, including the old hospital wing, in which Bobby Sands, who was a killer himself, starved himself and received a sentence for bombing a furniture shop. Ended up there.
So what are you saying should be the bottom line to bring the discussions to the next stage?
So the listed part of the building, we would suggest that it would be demolished and start again, start afresh and build something new. You know, the listing was following a request from an ex-prisoner and former Sinn Féin MLA, Paul Butler, who himself murdered a police officer. So we can't have the rewriting of history. We have to start afresh.
But would your party accept that there are many different perspectives in Northern Ireland? That's a statement of fact. Would you accept them being told at that site? The H block, that hospital wing, is to many people an iconic place that should not be demolished.
But the Troubles aren't something to be celebrated either, Stephen. You know, we have to respect victims, and respect needs to be shown to all victims. And that's something that hasn't happened recently. And you've seen that yourself with the cheers of Up the Ra at the likes of the West Belfast Festival and at the Olympic homecoming of, to Dublin. Respect needs to be shown to victims of the Troubles.
Carl?
Respect, absolutely, should be shown to victims of the Troubles, but I think that we should start knocking down buildings simply because the TUV call for it. You know, you can visit historic sites across Europe and across the world, thankfully with the foresight of people who disagreed with notions about knocking down sites just because they did or didn't like what happened there. So, no, I don't think that we can go down the road of demolition just to satisfy one group or the other. There are facts about what happened, despite disagreements on narrative. You know, things happened, historical events took place. Whether you disagree with them or agree with them is a different story, but buildings like that should be preserved. And, you know, if we're at the stage where we can't even come up with a proposal or a solution to recognise what happened and took place, prisoners of all backgrounds were in that jail, then we're in a pretty sorry state.
Alistair.
Well, I think Peter Robinson spelled it out a few years ago whenever he said that to keep that building where, as I say, Bobby Sands, who was a killer himself, starved himself, that you're leaving the potential for a shrine to be there to commemorate those who caused IRA violence.
Okay. Alistair, thank you. Carl, thank you. You're getting a sense there, obviously, of the disagreement, the political reality of Northern Ireland. So how would you tell a story, given the stark differences of opinion? In many places you can do that. The question is this place ready for it? Mr. McLaughlin at Banbridge Academy. Good morning, Robin.
Morning again, Stephen.
Morning again. So an update then on the mood at school?
So the mood's great. A lot of students now have joined us to celebrate together with their parents and my colleagues, and the mood is very good.
How do you celebrate with them? What do you give them?
So there's an opportunity to come together. It's them coming together.
There's me thinking of food immediately, Mr. McLaughlin. What are you feeding them with?
Maybe, Stephen, that's where your priorities lie.
Yeah. But it must be lovely to see people that value education and have the dreams now of moving on to the next stage of it.
Absolutely. What is lovely is to see the smile and to understand that they are now moving on in their lives and their chosen career paths. And it's great that we have been part of that journey. And they're always part of the school, and they'll have happy memories and friendships that will last for a lifetime. But it is the time for them to move on to the next stage of their lives. And you can see that in our young people. And I do personally think the future of Northern Ireland is very bright when you have the opportunity to work with the wonderful young people that we have across our community.
When I was, when it was my time to leave school, at that time, I thought it was one of the worst days of my life because I was being forced out of Inst. My time had come. I had to move on. I didn't want to. And that place was so important to me. What is it like as a teacher when young people, and you've been with them many years, and they're moving on? Is there a sense of sadness, whether you've built up a relationship with them clearly and they're leaving you?
Absolutely. They're part of you. They're part of the school. As I often say, they're the soul of the school, the memories they create when they're here. Not just the academic memories, the extra and co-curricular, all the dramas, all the shows, all the musicals, the sport, the drama, and the extra and co-curricular activities that they've been involved in. And those memories, of course, become part of you. But likewise, you want a young person to move on in life and develop the skills and understanding as well as the qualifications they need to move to the next stage. So yes, there is a tinge of sadness, but likewise, there's a tinge amongst the congratulations of it is time for them to move to the next stage of their lives and move on.
Who have you got for us?
So I'll let the young people introduce themselves.
My name is Beth Cordner.
Hello, Beth. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. Thank you. Really good to talk to you. So tell me how you did today.
I got an A star and two A's in my A levels.
Wow, you're bright. An A star and two A's. Congratulations. What are your subjects?
I did history, psychology, and health and social care.
Do you know what you want to do?
Yeah, I think I want to go on to be a teacher in history, so I'm doing an undergrad at Queen's for history, and then maybe PGCE in the future, but not so sure yet.
Brilliant. And why do you want to be a teacher, Beth?
I've just always wanted to, like, teach. I thought I wanted to be a primary school teacher, but then I sort of got up in the school, and I loved history, and my history teacher in school, I had her for 6 years, and she was just an absolute influence on me to really make me want to teach. So, yeah.
Isn't that so sweet? Isn't that so nice that your teacher's been an inspiration to you and you want to follow in her footsteps? What's her name?
Mrs. Johnson.
Mrs. Johnson. And why did you decide to stay in Northern Ireland? You're going to Queen's?
Yes.
Was it a difficult choice for you, those people that say, get out of here, experience something new?
Yeah, I'd say so. I really wanted to go, like, always to a Scottish university, so I'd applied for St Andrews and University of Edinburgh, and I'd gotten in, but then I never really thought I really wanted to go because my sister went to uni abroad, and I just don't think I would want to leave, you know, all my friends and everybody behind, and I just preferred, like, I could do the same subject here that I can do in Scotland, so I thought, why not do it here instead?
Yeah. And do you love Northern Ireland that much? Do you see a bright future working here and
yeah.
The feel of the place?
I think so, yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Okay, Beth, thank you for talking to me. Who's next?
I'm Hannah Kennedy.
Hello, Hannah. Hello, Hannah.
Hello.
Hiya. So how did you do today?
I got 2 A stars and 2 A's.
In what subjects?
Maths, further maths, physics and technology.
How are you feeling?
Pretty good.
Yeah. You going to be celebrating tonight?
No, I'm actually going down south.
Okay. I shouldn't be asking these questions in front of Mr. McLaughlin. What type of celebrations there might be tonight?
Celebrating is important, Stephen, too.
Okay, good stuff. Cake and orange juice, of course. So, Hannah, what do you want to do in the future? What are your aspirations?
Well, next year I'm going to go to Queen's to study electronics engineering, and then I'm hoping to maybe go into medical electronics afterwards.
What's that? Medical electronics. What's that mean?
Making things like pacemakers or diabetes monitors and even just monitors in hospitals.
Why do you want to do that?
Well, I've always wanted to help people, but I've also just loved coding and electronics in school.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, listen, congratulations.
Thank you.
Well done. Who's next?
Hi, this is James Kelly.
James Kelly. Good morning.
Morning.
How'd you do?
Got 3 B's.
I can tell you're a big fan of the Nolan Show, James. I can tell.
How come?
Just because I'm pretending. Congratulations on your grades. How does it feel?
Feels good.
Good man. Good man. And what are you going to do?
I'm going to do an apprenticeship in software engineering.
Oh, you're going to be worth a fortune in the future then, aren't you? Software engineering. And so you're not going to university, you're making that choice to go into an apprenticeship. Tell me why.
Well, I'm going to university, but I'll be working 4 days a week and going to uni just one.
Okay.
So the chance to make money while going to uni, that's why I want to do it.
Here or across the water?
In Belfast.
Brilliant. And why did you decide to stay?
I just don't want to leave. I don't think I'll enjoy it abroad.
You think what?
I don't think I'd enjoy it abroad.
Okay. Like what I'd say to you, this is old man to young person here, right? What I'd say to you is travel at your age is so important. I'm not saying university, but get yourself away. Get yourself, if you can, travel as much as you can before you have a mortgage and kids and all that comes with it. But good luck for the future, sir. And thanks for talking to us this morning.
Thank you.
Who's next?
I'm Daniel Hutchinson.
Hello, Daniel. Well, how'd it go?
Went pretty well, I think.
Good. What'd you get?
ABC.
Brilliant. In what subjects?
Maths, business studies and chemistry.
And what do you want to do, mate?
I want to study finance at Queen's.
Why?
It just sort of interests me and it makes a lot of money.
And what are your dreams about life? Like what have you got in your head about what you want to do in this next phase? Is it ultimately about nailing down a job, or do you not panic at your age? Is it more about having a bit of, you know, having freedom and making sure that you enjoy those your youth, that you lose just too quickly? Or what is it about at your age? What are the pressures to achieve, for example, in this next stage?
Well, I'm looking to do well in my course at uni, and then my course has placement year, so get in somewhere there and then maybe get a job after that.
Well, listen, good luck. Thank you for talking to us. I think we've one more student. Isn't this a great testament to Queen's that we've had so many of these students this morning, and they're automatically saying, I want to stay, I want to go to Queen's? And that's because we've got fantastic universities here, really top-notch universities. Who's the last student this morning?
Hi, Stephen. It's Corey Hamilton.
Hello, Graham. Well, Corey. So tell me about you. What did you get?
So I done biology, chemistry and geography, and I got an A star and two A's.
Whoa. What was the pressure like doing the exam?
Oh, it was insane. Yeah, it was, but sure, just have to do it.
And did you, like, it's that long ago for me. Remember, I'm 51 this month, right? So we're talking about 33 years ago when I was doing these. Like, were you confident going in because of the work you had done? Or did the nerves get to you?
I was pretty confident going into most of them. There were some chemistry exams that are just kind of that difficult. You have no idea how you're going to do, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And what's it feel like this morning to get those fantastic grades?
Oh, it was absolutely amazing. It was over the moon.
What are you going to do?
Hopefully medicine. Well, yeah, I've got an offer for medicine at Lincoln.
Wow, brilliant.
Yeah.
So you're going to be a doctor?
Hopefully.
Tell me why.
I suppose just because I love the sciences of kind of medical sciences, and then also I'm a people's person and I just really enjoy, you know, interacting with people, and I just kind of put them all together and I get a doctor.
Brilliant. And are you going to go into, is it too soon, or have you got a speciality, a GP, or do you want to be a surgeon? Or
yeah, I'm actually working in the GP clinic and I really love it, so I would love to be a GP.
It's a lot of people interaction, but it's a lot of pressure. Doctors work hard.
Yeah, definitely. But I suppose it's something you kind of get used to.
And why Lincoln?
It's just where I got an offer for. It's that competitive at the minute for medicine that anywhere you get an offer for, you go to it.
Is it scary to leave home?
Oh, very scary. Yeah, it's scary.
Are you getting your washing done and your meals cooked at the minute?
Definitely am. Yeah, it's scary not to have the comfort blanket of mum and dad.
Like, can you even iron? I still can't iron. Can you iron?
Yeah, I can iron. I can give it a go.
Right, okay. And what's this summer going to be like?
Pretty good. I suppose it'll just be another 4 or 5 weeks left and just celebration and hopefully maybe go a bit more travel.
Just one final question, Corey. And I was mentioning, you know, I went to the Inst in the centre of Belfast, and all of these years later, like, I could actually cry right now thinking what that school did for me. It completely gave me a sense of self and a sense of belonging. Like, it really did. What has your school, Banbridge, meant to you? And is it a sad day now that you're leaving?
It's a very sad day. The academy's kind of been the centre of our lives for 7 years now. It's something we've all got really used to, and everyone who went to the academy has said absolutely loved it. It's been a fantastic school to go to. And we will really miss it, especially the teachers.
And tell me why the teachers are so special to you.
They're just so willing to go that extra mile. All teachers are they want to see the best for us. They don't want to just, it's not a 9-to-5 for them. It's, you know, they really are here to help us and help us achieve the best that we can, I suppose.
And you can tell a difference, can't you? You can tell a difference between a teacher who cares and a school that cares and maybe one that doesn't.
The grades definitely show it.
Yeah. Well, look, put me back to Mr. McLaughlin just finally, if that's all right. And I guess that's testament to your school that Corey is saying that so naturally, and the teaching staff who you lead, Robin.
Yeah, absolutely. Stephen, I would say it's a partnership between home
school, and that's the teaching and non-teaching colleagues, and all of our external partners. You mentioned the quality of the universities, the quality of the regional colleges, and the quality of education that we have across Northern Ireland is testimony to the quality of the workforce and the relationship that there is with the community, and then the young people benefit from that.
Well, listen, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning, Mr. McLaughlin, and to the students, and we wish you well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Right. There is a one-stop shop student special from On Your Behalf, packed with helpful advice for parents and students. You can find that on BBC Sounds if you search for On Your Behalf. CCEA. Goodness sake. They were sending my ear CCEA there. No, they weren't. It was my cock-up. CCEA. Will operate a results helpline. Why am I in good form today? From Thursday the 15th of August until Wednesday the 28th, 02890 26 12 60 is the number. Department for Economy's Career Service is also operating an online advice service where you can access its help by telephoning 0300 200 78 20. 0300 200 78 20. Right. Art.
Hiya.
Good morning, Art. Is that short for Arthur or what?
I always felt that Arthur sounded a little bit
posh,
a little bit posh. And when I was at school in St. Columb's in Derry, and my cousin started calling me Art, and Art. So I opted for Art, and I've been Art ever since.
So it's
the reason
you see when people shorten my name to Steve, I could deck them. If you ever want to wind me up, call me Steve.
I like the name Art, and I like the name Artie. It's less formal than Arthur, you know. Yeah. That was just what it was. Listen, the minister, Paul isn't his name, is it?
Paul Given is the education minister.
Paul Given, that's right. I have to say one thing. He was kind of lauding the sort of the return to education, which he did himself. And I'm a former guidance counsellor. I'm retired now. You know, I was a teacher of languages, and I trained as a guidance counsellor in Trinity, actually. But the point I wanted to make was that the minister said you can do medicine in Trinity. You can do medicine in all the universities in the South.
Well, can you?
You can do my. Well, I need to check up in DCU because it's 5 or 6 years now since I've been working as a guidance counsellor, but you can do it in UCD, you can do it in Cork, you can do it in Galway, you can do it in Limerick.
Well, here's a question for you.
Yeah,
I'm very, very rarely in. When I go to Dublin, I go down to Dublin to fly to America. I get the coach down to the airport now to go again. I must go down. Actually, I've been in Galway a few times. Here's a question.
Yeah,
for those people, those young people who want to leave Northern Ireland simply because they want a different perspective, they want a different environment. Is the mood and tone and feel of living in the Republic of Ireland much different than living in Northern Ireland?
It is to some extent. Like my two sons, like are in their 30s now, and they went to school down here, and were their mothers down here, and they were educated down here, they're proud of Northern blood in them, but sure, every dairyman's proud anyway, you know. There's a difference, definitely, you know. I always say, and this is only my own opinion, that the South is there's a lot of greed and corruption in the South, and that's what cripples the South. And in the North, it's division.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my feeling about it, you know. But there's a lot of good stuff.
Where's the better place for an 18 to 21 year old? These students we're talking to today, if they were choosing between the South or Northern Ireland, where's the better place for them to live?
Well, I'm too old to say, like, because it's over 50 years since I was 18.
It's cheaper in the south, right? The fees are cheaper. The property prices, rentals, I don't know what they would be.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The big drawback about the South now is where do you live?
Yeah.
And there are people who are talking about going to university in Dublin now. That's the big question they're raising. Where do you live?
Yeah.
And the rents are going up through the clouds.
Well, listen, Arthur, thank you for calling us today.
Thanks, Stephen. Nice to talk to you. Hey,
very much. Bye. Morning to you. Thomas in Belfast, back to the maze. Morning, Thomas.
Good morning, Stephen.
Morning.
Stephen, I would just like to make you aware, you, Paul Given, and Peter Robinson, the Mays housed loyalist and Republican prisoners.
Imagine meeting the three of us up at Dark Entry.
Forget about that. But do you understand what I'm saying, Stephen? I mean, this morning you've made reference to Bobby Sands four or five times. You've made reference to the hunger strike and a strain to republicanism. You haven't mentioned the Schenkel Butchers were there. Adair was there. Billy Wright was there. Every time this subject comes up on your show, especially,
well,
it seems to be,
well, Thomas,
it won't be a strain to Republicans, but there were loyalists and Republicans in that.
Thomas, the reason I was doing that, first of all, you're right to raise it, right? And you're right that they were there. The reason I was doing that is because it was Robinson who blocked the development of the Mays. It was Peter Robinson, 12 years ago, in that letter from America, blocked it. So that was the context with which I was talking.
But I find it interesting that the context he blocked it was, it won't be a strain to Republicans, Bobby Sands. But he never mentioned the other half of the jail. That didn't seem to annoy him.
So tell me, how do you think we're at a stage in Northern Ireland where the vast majority of us could tolerate the different perspectives being taught in that one building?
I think what you mean, Stephen, is could we tolerate the truth? You have young lads on there who are going on to be teachers. Do you want them to hear British history? Or do you want them to tell the truth?
No, but what version of history are they getting, Thomas?
Well, they can get whatever version. They can get two versions. They can get a version that would back up Republicans on niceness. They can get a version that would back up loyalists. But you've got to tell the truth. You can't airbrush things out like it didn't happen. Like, it's a major, major part of what went on in this place.
Can you have an unbiased version?
Or, well, of course you can.
Can you?
Well, how could you not? You could say these men went to jail on both sides for something they believed in. Some of them starved themselves to death. Some of them didn't.
And for those hunger strikers, we'll talk about Billy Wright as well, but for those hunger strikers, what's the story, Thomas, that should be told?
Well, the story that I think should be told is, them men were in there fighting for a free Ireland. They got imprisoned and they wanted change, and they thought the hunger strike was the best way to bring about it. And they were prepared to starve to death for what they believed in. And I can't see a problem telling that story.
Were they terrorists?
In some people's eyes, they were. In other people's eyes, they weren't. That's why you need...
And do you show their victims in the maze?
Show everybody's victims.
Do you show the photographs of the people they helped kill?
Well, would you put pictures of the Schenkel Butchers' victims lying up bandages, cut the ribbons?
That's the question.
What do you mean?
Would you?
No.
Would you put not cut to ribbons, but would you talk about the barbarism associated with the Schenkel Butchers? How could you tell that story and not?
No, you couldn't. You have to tell both stories. This is what I'm trying to say.
And would you be concerned about the Mays becoming a shrine to Billy Wright?
I'm not concerned about it becoming a shrine to anyone. If you're going to do it, you tell the truth, and you let people make their own minds up if it's a shrine or if it's telling the truth. Or if it's a museum.
Yeah, but when you say the truth, so many people have different definitions of the truth here.
But at the end of the day, Stephen, I mean, okay, you can have definitions, but people will make their own minds up on who's a hero and who's a terrorist. They'll make their own minds up and on different sides.
Stay there if you want. Let's bring Malachy in as well. Go ahead, Malachy.
Yes, Stephen, it's interesting. And to bring you up to date on exactly what you're talking to Thomas about there, you know, my daughter was recently back from Auschwitz, and, you know, what you just said, you know, do you go into what the Germans done to the Jews, et cetera, et cetera? You know, I recently was at the Fela in West Belfast, and in one of the talks in the auditorium, there was a guy, and this was interesting for me, there was a guy there who had written the book, The Man That Swallowed the Dictionary, about David Irvine. He was a loyalist prisoner in Long Cache. Right beside him was one of the guys that was on the hunger strikes for when the hunger strikes took place. So I, after the whole talk, was able to sit down and speak to a loyalist UVF prisoner about why he went to jail, what made him go to jail, and what his crime was. And next, right sitting beside him, was an IRA prisoner. Obviously, I'm an isolationist, so that would be more my side of the fence. But where would you get that sort of exposure, only in the likes of Fela? And could you imagine having an auditorium built up at the Mace. They explained to the unionists why young guys from West Belfast, where I'm from, went to school, were ordinary kids, and ended up on hunger strikes in a prison and died for a cause, and why young loyalists went to prison and killed innocent
Catholics. Paul Given, our education minister, has said this morning the DUP will be no shrine to terrorists at the Mace, is what Paul has said this morning.
But Thomas is absolutely right. It depends on the narrative, but the only way you're going to get over the ignorance of the narrative is to hear both sides of the story. Longcash, if you take one of the biggest tourist attractions in the south of Ireland, is Kilmainham Jail. You know what I mean? A massive, massive tourist attraction. And as Thomas just said, Longcash and the Haystacks would be a huge, huge tourist attraction for the people of Lisburn.
Okay. Malachy, we're out of time, as you can hear. But thank you, sir. Thank you, Thomas. Thanks, everyone. Good luck. If you're 18 today and whatever grades you've got, it'll definitely be all right. Somehow it worked out for me. If it can work out for me, it'll work out for you too. Enjoy whatever you're doing today. See you tomorrow for more Nolan at 9.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet at Stephen Nolan.
What are the most memorable travel adventures? Those where we open our eyes and our minds to new experiences. It's all to see here in Azerbaijan. New flavors, a new appreciation of ancient history, of natural beauty and of rich contrasts. This is a world of culture, cuisine, wellness and adventure, all yours for the taking. Thought you knew Azerbaijan? Take another look. To plan your Azerbaijan adventure, visit azerbaijan.travel.
I'm Sumi Somaskander from the Global Story podcast, where we're looking at Ukraine's surprise attack on Russian territory. Thousands of Russian residents have been forced to flee their homes as Ukrainian forces edge closer and closer into Russia. Could this bold gamble shift the dynamics of this war, or could it backfire? The Global Story podcast brings you unique perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.